This is Paul Kangas on radio station KPOO, and this is Reality Sandwich, an investigation into the killing of President Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Dr. Martin Luther King. And with us today, live in the studio, is an expert on the assassination of President Kennedy, Hal Verb. Good morning, Hal.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Well, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful sunny morning.
It sure is.
You've got some ideas and information on...
The Secret Service.
The Secret Service.
Yeah, first of all, I want to debunk today's story that was in the Chronicle about a Secret Serviceman having fired a shot that fatally injured Kennedy. There's absolutely no evidence of that. The Zapruder film doesn't show it. And no other investigator, no other film that I know of shows it. But I do want to mention something about
the
Secret Service.
Well, that was the one where the Secret Service accidentally stumbled with his rifle and it went off and killed the president.
Correct. It's by a fellow by the name of Howard Donahue. He's supposedly investigating since 1967. But from my standpoint, I've never even heard of this guy. And believe me, I've been in touch with most of all the major and minor researchers in the country since the very first day, which is the very first day of the Kennedy assassination when I started investigating this murder.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you something in addition to the Secret Service. According to most reports, I think, including Chief Rowley, who was head of the Secret Service, who may have testified, I don't recall, I don't have the exact volume in front of me, but he said that none of the Secret Service people were outside of the motorcade. That is, all the agents were in the motorcade. There were no agents who were in the Dealey Plaza area or in other buildings or in the surrounding vicinity. That is only a half-truth. The fact is that before the House Select Committee, a Colonel Jones had testified that there were between 8 to 12 agents who were hired on behalf of the Secret Service who were plainclothesmen who were in the area. These agents were never identified and they were never called to testify. If indeed anything were to happen during the president's arrival through that area, they were to identify themselves as being secrets on behalf of the Secret Service team. Nobody knows at this point whether or not that happened, although you do know that there are rumors that when people ran up to the Knoll that people flashed badges that they were identified as Secret Service people. So the question is, why weren't these people called, and who are they, and where were they?
And why are they speaking now?
Yes.
Why do you suppose this information has surfaced now?
Well, actually, it didn't surface now. This information was known by the House Select Committee back in the 70s.
Well, I was thinking of the Chronicle news story about the Secret Service agent who shot the president.
Oh, I think what they're trying to do is debunk various conspiracy theories. For example, if they can debunk one theory and they can debunk another, they can say, you see, you fellows have been doing research, you don't really have anything. And since we can knock holes in a couple of conspiracy theories, we can knock holes in any conspiracy theory and then say, well, you people have nothing to say. There's no further use in having another investigation. We might as well call it quits, and the Warren Commission is correct, and let's go home and, you know, sleep on it.
Right. Would you say that this new theory is the result of Stone's movie?
Not necessarily. I believe that there probably will be books coming out, articles coming out that will look into the files of, for example, the Dallas police files are now being looked upon. I understand that Current Affairs had some people looking into it. To their files, so there'll be things coming out. Of course, all the files have been sanitized. When they say reopen the files, that's kind of a joke. It's like Norma Mailer said, opening the refiles and expecting to find something is a lot like parking your car in the South Bronx and expecting to find it all there when you get back to it.
Right. Well, are there any portions of the files that you think, if they were released now, that would be valid, that would not be doctored, that would be useful?
Yes, there are. I think the CIA files, I think any files about the ONI. Of course, I don't believe the CIA and the ONI is going to release those files. My belief is that Oswald was working on behalf of the ONI. In fact, when I was doing research, I had discovered a tape recording that he had made in New Orleans, and I found a famous slip, which has been published all over, about the fact that he said he was under the instruction of the U.S. government. And then he slips and goes back and says, I mean to say I was not under the instruction of the U.S. government. The volumes do not print the fact that he stated I was under the instruction of the U.S. government. They left that completely out.
Right. Are there other files, like maybe photographs, that you think, if they're released, might be useful?
No question about it. There are hundreds, perhaps thousands, of particular slides that have never been examined, not even by the researchers. They are available. The FBI, according to Richard Sprague, only investigated perhaps 7% of all the existing photographs, slides, films, etc. And of course, you know, their 7% was a totally inadequate examination. For example, the Alkins photo showing the famous figure of Oswald in the front building of the Texas School Book Depository, it's published in the volumes in many cases. However, no particular photograph in the volumes is complete. It's all cropped. They left out important evidence and have shown who knows what, you know, possible assassins roaming in different buildings. I'm not saying that there were possible assassins or backup men, but the point is they didn't publish a complete photo. So even the examination by the FBI was totally inadequate for the virtually non-existing 7%.
Have you ever heard of this photo? I've heard that there is a photo of some of the motorcade route just at the moment of the assassination, and one of the pictures shows Johnson ducking down before the shooting starts.
I have heard of that, but I have not been able to find any single photograph. I've examined Sprague's listing, Richard E. Sprague, who printed all the existing films that he knew about back in the late 70s, or I'm sorry, in the late 60s, and I don't find any evidence in those films. Now, of course, I have not seen all the films. In fact, nobody has seen all the films.
Right.
There isn't a single person in the whole country who's seen all those films.
So the files that we want released are really the photo files.
Well, that's part of it.
Right, those are the least likely to be doctored type.
Yes, and of course, we need to examine the autopsy photographs, which, of course, by this point in time, we don't know the chain of possession. We don't know if it's doctored. We don't know if it's altered. There's probably no person in the whole country who can tell you to look at a photograph and say this photo has been doctored or altered. The famous militant photo of Oswald, is that a doctored photograph? Is it, airbrushed? There's so many questions about who saw that photograph. When I was doing research, I discovered the person who actually saw the photograph, which arrived at the militant, and I interviewed him to find out what exactly was in that photograph. Now, remember, this is back in 63, and I interviewed him several years after the assassination. He told me he received it about maybe 6 months before the assassination, which seems to be true, because he sent it out around March or April of 1963, or at least he allegedly sent the photo. Remember, I say allegedly.
Right. One of my favorite photos is the Mormon photo.
Oh, yeah.
And I would really like to see a good version of the original, and maybe the negatives. The FBI has the negatives, and nobody's actually seen a good copy of it.
Well, as a matter of fact, not only the Mormon photo, but there's a Bruder film. There's a great doubt about whether the original that's supposed to be in existence is actually the original. You know, there was some evidence that the film was taken from Zapruder on the night of the assassination and sent to the National Photographic Identification Center, which is the CIA investigating body that investigates photographs, and then returned to him, and I believe it was returned to him under pressure by the Secret Services, who probably said, listen, Mr. Zapruder, this is very important. It's your patriotic duty. We must examine it. We'll get it back to you in no time. He got it back to him in the same day. There's a lot of things in the testimony of Zapruder that are highly questionable, and he seems to be dodging and, running around the questions as if there's something that the commission staff knew about what was happening, and they did not want to go into it.
Right, yeah. Actually, on the Zapruder film, the one frame that I find most interesting is the one showing the umbrella man standing there, raising the signal. I was in the military, and we were taught assassination techniques, and one of the techniques we were taught was the using of hand signals and flags to signal when to shoot.
I would discount it for one very basic reason. It is much better to organize an assassin based on the sound of a rifle than it is to base it on a hand movement. The sound of a rifle, one can react extremely quickly to the sound of a rifle than one can to a hand movement. The hand movement cannot occur in the frequency of time that was needed to frame Oswald. Notice I said frame Oswald in the period of time. For example, Zapruder, you will see, if you examine Willis's film, you will see Zapruder in Willis's fifth frame. These are pictures he took. He was standing in an opposite point of view from Zapruder, and he took a famous film called Willis Number 5, which shows Zapruder taking his camera, and the president is already wounded because you can see his slumping in the car. That frame was actually taken at frame 210. Now, if it was taken at frame 210, and Willis said that he took the photo because he snapped the shutter based on a sound that he heard, based on a sound that he heard. That was the sound of gunfire. That meant that the shot had to be fired before frame 210. And according to the Warren Commission, any shot fired before frame 210 could have not been fired from the sixth floor window because frame 210 was obstructed by a tree that would have blocked Oswald or anyone else firing from that window.
Right.
It was impossible.
They're still debating on the, you know, that tape recording they have of the from the stuck police microphone. They're still debating whether you can hear four shots, five shots, six shots, or three shots, because the shots are so close together. It's just this bunch of, it's a hail of bullets all at simultaneous.
Well, as a matter of fact, two researchers, Josiah Thompson and Hal Weisberg, have found evidence that the simultaneity, almost near equal time, of two shots hitting the head, the famous headshot, which shattered his brain.
Right,
there
is
indications that there are almost two shots fired at the same time. If that's the case, of course, that rules out one assassin.
Yes,
and rules it out. That may
explain why there is so much blood splattering in that picture, because a tremendous amount of skull and blood came out for one shot, unless they hit an artery and the head, and just because it's like a halo of blood.
No question about that. Shot was definitely meant to destroy all of brain matter, and of course the president's brain was half missing. Most of the people said that they saw half a brain that was missing. You know, most of the doctors said the brain was virtually gone. Some of it remained, and there was other tissue that remained. I mean, the shot was an impossible shot from the sixth floor window.
Right.
Impossible.
What I'm thinking is there might have been two shots hit the head at the same time.
Oh, there's evidence for that. And, of course, the evidence is by the nature of the reaction and examining different photographs, well, it's actually the Zapruder film, and other indications that would indicate, you know, the mysterious autopsy and x-ray photographs, which could have been doctored.
Right, right.
But were never totally examined.
I'll tell you one other piece of evidence I would like to see released, which I don't think they can doctor,
yes.
And that is the Watergate tapes on which Nixon and Haldeman are talking about paying Hunt.
I'd like to go into that, but unfortunately, Paul, I do have to run.
Okay, Hal.
If you do wish to call me, you know how to reach me, and I'd be glad to discuss this matter and other matters with you.
Let's do another program next week.
Absolutely.
Okay, this has been Hal Verb, an expert on the assassination, speaking to us on radio station KPOO. Thank you, Hal.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. And here we are back at the station. Let's see. We now continue with the program and discussion of what's going on in 1992 as Oliver Stone's movie continues to make waves across the nation. The media response has been phenomenal. Every radio station, television station, newspaper, magazine in the country is running bogus stories now about how they're going to release this document, they're going to release that document, and it sounds to me like a term that was developed during the Vietnam War, saturation bombing. They attempted to discredit Oliver Stone's movie before it was shown, in the most massive attack on a film in the history of the world. And now, because the film has become such a roaring success for Warner Brothers, the Warner film industry is now in the black. They're making a tremendous profit off of the JFK movie, thanks to the outpouring of support of the American population. And in fact, Warner was in the red before the JFK movie hit the streets. But now, because JFK is making $50 million, Warner Brothers realizes that the American population is voting with their pocketbook to reopen the investigation and put on trial the actual assassins. We've become a nation searching out the false kings who killed the true king, and we've all become a nation of Hamlets looking for the evidence to prosecute the actual assassins who took the throne away from John Kennedy. And so what we're suffering now is saturation bombing from the massive CIA media retaliation to Oliver Stone's movie. They're trying to neutralize the movie with these false stories all over the place. And let's see, I think it's almost time for a little musical break here. Time for some music. How about that, JJ?
Sure, you're right, and you know that you're right on target here at Hicks Target. My name is Mark Antony, and these are the Nihilists. On my left, a man the band likes to call a saxophone player. Only been playing saxophone for 3 weeks. Isn't that amazing? And on my right, on a work release program from San Bruno County Jail, on leopard skin jumpsuit, the one.
Sandwich on radio station KPOO, and a continuing examination of new evidence on who killed Dr. King, President Kennedy, and Senator Robert Kennedy. With all this information coming out, many people are saying, gee, it's hard to tell what really happened in Dallas that day. It's hard to tell who really did it. Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you are the jury. Have you ever sat on a jury prosecuting before? That's the problem. The jury gets presented the defense arguments. The jury gets presented the prosecution's arguments. And then you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have to decide. The defense arguments are that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, the magic bullet did it, and why don't we just go to sleep and forget about all this stuff? After all, Kennedy's dead. That's what the government is saying. But we, the people, are saying prosecute the CIA for the killing of John Kennedy. Like, let's talk about the role of Lyndon Baines Johnson in the assassination. Here he was, vice president. After Kennedy stopped the air cover for the invasion of Cuba and the invasion lost, Johnson was at a cocktail party in Washington, D.C. When who comes up to him but General Charles Cabell, and he goes up to Johnson and he grabs Johnson's lapel and he's leaning on Johnson and talking in his ear saying, you know, why did Kennedy do that? Why did he cut off the air cover? You know, that caused us to lose the invasion. Johnson looked at General Cabell and said, if I was president, I wouldn't have done that. Then about 2 weeks later, Johnson's at another cocktail party in Washington, D.C., when a lobbyist from the oil companies in Texas come up to him and say, what is this I heard? Kennedy is going to cut off the oil depletion allowance, meaning we're going to actually have to pay some taxes on the vast oil profits we make. How did that happen? Why, Lyndon, why did you let President Kennedy pass this oil depletion allowance? And Johnson just looked at the lobbyist from the oil company and said, if I was president, I wouldn't do that. And the lobbyist winked, realizing what was going on, just like Cabell realized what was going on. And about a month later, a general from the Pentagon runs into Lyndon Johnson at a reception in Washington, D.C. at the Pentagon, and the general takes Johnson aside and whispers in his ear, what is this order that President Kennedy has issued withdrawing U.S. troops from Vietnam? Does he want to expose all the operations going on over there? The CIA's got a lot of delicate operations doing with agricultural products going on over there, namely opium growing. And if we withdraw the troops, then we're going to expose all this. And the general said to Johnson, is there any way we can reverse this presidential order 263 withdrawing the troops from Vietnam and ending the Vietnam War? And Johnson looked at the general and said, well, I wouldn't have done that if I was president, and if I was president, I would reverse that order. The general winks, Johnson winks, and there, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you see exactly how the conspiracy was planned. They simply approached the number two man and asked him major policy decisions to see how he would respond to major policy decisions. Whoever the vice president is has to be a yes man. If the president says withdraw the troops from Vietnam, Johnson should have said that's what the policy of the U.S. government is and I support it. Instead, Johnson participated in this conspiracy to ambush and execute Kennedy in a coup d'etat by disagreeing with the president on the five major policy plans that Kennedy had put forward to save the country money by cutting the defense budget, to bring in more taxes for education by taxing the oil companies, and moving towards world peace by stopping the Cold War and the attacks on Cuba. Johnson participated in the planning of the assassination of President Kennedy, and this information was used in a movie called The Godfather. They use that as the model. But it's how these kind of things happen, if you're wondering how these kind of things happen. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that's the problem. You're being presented evidence from both sides now. Of course, the defense side, the government side, has millions of dollars to write all kinds of books and spread their stories. But the problem is their stories don't hold water. And you in the jury see that. That's why you're going to see Stone's movie. But this is the battle going on. All right, that's the heavy part of the program. How about some light news on the program? I saw a news item the other day that they've dedicated a new golf course in Dallas, Texas to President Kennedy. The golf course is located near the grassy knoll where Kennedy was shot. And the only problem with the golf course is that it has only six holes in it. Yes, that was a joke. Okay, thought I'd bring you down off that heavy news. A six-hole golf course, right. Well, that's because, you know, the story is there were six bullet holes in Kennedy. I don't slander Dallas, the town. It's a nice town, and those people took a bum rap, and maybe I should apologize for that joke. But I thought it was funny when I heard it. Let's see. If you want to see what's going on in this country, what could be happening in this country around this issue, take a look at what happened in Nicaragua about 15 years ago when it was discovered what the government was doing down there. I don't know if you remember how the Somoza government was overthrown in Nicaragua, but in Nicaragua there was a blood bank run by Somoza. And the blood bank run by Somoza, when you walked into the Somoza blood bank and you sat down to donate a pint of blood, you frequently never woke up, because they wouldn't take one pint, not two, not three, they took all your blood. They were doing this to alcoholics in Nicaragua. And then in the evening, they would load the bodies into army trucks behind the blood bank and throw the bodies into a volcano. Well, the editor of the local, the major newspaper in Nicaragua, his name was Chamorro, found out about this, and so he hid a couple of reporters and photographers around the blood bank, and they watched, took pictures of alcoholics going into the blood bank donating blood to Somoza's blood banks. And then they took pictures in the evening as the bodies were being loaded into army trucks from behind the blood bank. And then they followed the trucks to the volcano and took pictures of the bodies being thrown in the volcano. And then they published those pictures in the newspaper the next day. Well, that was the story that broke the Somoza government. It's quite possible that Oliver Stone's movie will break the George Bush, Richard Nixon government and land George Bush and Richard Nixon in jail if the people wake up, like in Nicaragua, the people rose up against Somoza and peacefully, massively, democratically drove Somoza out of Nicaragua to Miami. And I don't want to scare people about donating bloods at blood banks, because we need people to donate blood. I donated myself because I might be in an accident, and I like to have a little credit in the bank. Plus, we need blood. You know, blood is one of those things that only you can donate. But the story basically is to try and understand historical events like the... By the way, what they were doing with the blood in Nicaragua is they were selling it to the Upjohn Drug Company in the United States, and Upjohn was using it for one of the things they were using the plasma for was the manufacture of lipstick in the United States. So that's the cost sometimes of life in a world where the United States dominates the world economy, and people like Somoza will do anything to make a buck. Murder in order to make lipstick. But I hope that story didn't bother you too much. I just wanted you to realize the power when the population of a country wakes up to the horrible crimes that some people in the government participate in. And hopefully Oliver Stone's movie is waking people up. Oliver Stone's going to be appearing at a movie, at a town meeting in New York City next week. By the way, in Fremont, there's another major assassination forum on March 7th in Fremont at the Veterans Hall in Fremont on Saturday, March 7th at 7 p.m. If you want more information on it, please give a call to 415-897-0153 and we'll have more information on it. I'll be one of the speakers at the forum in Fremont. And also, there's going to be a surprise guest. No, it's not Oliver Stone, and it's not Jim Garrison, but a surprise guest who will be an important investigator in the investigation of the assassinations. And that's Saturday in Fremont at the Veterans Hall. You exit 880 off of the Alvarado Niles Road, and that's how you get there. By the way, if you would like a copy of the petition, we are petitioning the government to release the Watergate tapes and the JFK files. If you'd like a copy of the petition, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, Paul Kangas, at P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142. And I'll give you that again. Grab a pencil. By the way, JJ, how much time do we have left here? 1 minute, 2 minutes? So that address again, if you want to write to us, is P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142. And this program will be rebroadcast on Tuesday morning at 7:30, or you can actually meet some of the people at the special JFK Assassination Forum in Fremont on March 7th, Saturday, 7 p.m. Tickets are available through a ticket agency. I'm not sure. You'll have to call the number to find out where. The phone number again is 415-897-0153. And this has been your host, Paul Kangas, speaking to you from radio station KPOO